Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Pei Vav Amud Aleph. Cheresh Shote V'Katan. This takes us back all the way to the beginning of the Masechta. Shishachatu, that they shechted ba'acherim ro'im otam. This is what we already established earlier in the Masechta, that if there are others that are supervising their shechita, then chayav lechasot. Then you have to do kisui, because when they have supervision, our assumption is that the Cheresh Shote V'Katan do a proper shechita, because of the supervision that's being provided. Just note that we did see earlier the Balei HaTosafot made a distinction between this case and other cases in Shas. Over here it says, V'acherim ro'im otam. Over here it doesn't sound like they are necessarily actively participating with the Katan, but rather ro'im otam, that they are just literally supervising, watching what they're doing, as opposed to other scenarios in Shas where we have them being actively guided, or if someone else is involved in the process. Over here it sounds like we're just watching them from afar. In that case, we assume it's a good shechita, and a good shechita results in necessity for kisui adam. Beinan le bein atzman. On the other hand, if they do it on their own, without any supervision, patur melechasot. They are patur, there is no need for kisui adam in that case. Bechein, and le'inyan otoved beno. The din of otoved beno, which we know is lo tishachatu b'yom echad, there has to be a shechita in order to trigger the restriction on the other animal, whether it's the mother or the offspring. Then shishachatu v'acherim ro'im otan, if a cheresh shote v'katan did a shechita with supervision, then it's considered to be a good shechita. Asur l'shchot achareihen. Then you can't shecht after them the oto or the beno, whichever one is the second in that case, because the first one was a good shechita. Beinan, the bein atzman, if they do it on their own, without any supervision, Rabbi Meir matir lishkot achareihen. Rabbi Meir says, go ahead and you can check the other animal. Again, the assumption being that the first shechita was not a qualified shechita, and therefore you don't have oto ve'pen over here because you didn't do shechita. Now this is in context of Rabbi Meir believing both by kisui adam and oto ve'pen that shechita she'en ruya shma shechita. Shechita that is not a good shechita, still classified as a shechita. Nevertheless, over here, Rabbi Meir clearly believes that the shechita is not even a shechita she'en ru'ya. It's a complete failure in the shechita. He believes that the cheresh shote v'katan are apt to do something that makes it that there isn't even a shechita in this situation. And therefore, we're going to see in the Gemara, but it's clear from Rabbi Meir, he thinks that they make it into a nevela, not into just something that is not kashir l'achila, but it's actually a nevela because they didn't do a shechita that would remove the shame nevela from the animal. And that's why he believes, both in the Reisha, which is Rabbi Meir, and here in the Seifa, that, first of all, you don't need kisui adam, and number two is oto ve'peno doesn't apply because you haven't done shechita. And early on in the Masechta, we discussed that when it comes to the shechita of the cheresh shote v'katan, usually we're speaking about problems like shihiya, which is something that after the fact, you have no idea whether the shihiya was done. Meaning that there's certain types of trefot in the shechita itself, where after the fact you can't tell whether it was done properly or not. Obviously, if it's done in a way that it's obvious that there was a problem in the shechita, then you just check after the fact. It has to be something where there's a kilkul, like shihiya, where there's no way to know after the fact whether they did it right or not. If someone was supervising them, we could know that information. But if no one's supervising them, then we can't know that information, and that's why we have a problem over here. On the other hand, the Chachamim, Osrim, the Chachamim say that you cannot shech the other animal, because we do worry about Oto Ve'Beno. Umodim, Shim Shachat, they do agree, if you do Shechita, Shein Ushtofeg Et Ha'arbaim. There's a sufficient Safek over here as to whether the Shechita, the Cheresh Shote V'Katan, was efficacious, that we can't give Malkot. Rashi over here repeats the refrain that we saw back on Daf Pei Amud Aleph, that Hatrat Safek Hi. That the problem here is that you give the Hatra'ah, it's Hatrat Safek. You can already see the Mesorah Shas changes the language to be Aveirat Safek Hu, because as we discussed back on Pei Amud Aleph, it was strange that Rashi says the problem as to why you don't get Malkot is Hatrat Safek. It's inherently in the Aveira that you have a problem, which is, we don't know if you violated the Avera. How can you give someone Malkot if we just don't know if you really violated it or didn't violate it? We need enough of a reason or strong enough consideration that you did violate the Avera before we can penalize you for it. We don't know. We can't penalize you for getting about the trot safek. And that was what we discussed back on Pei Amud is why maybe Rashi uses Hatrat Safek instead of the Safek Isur. But the easier and more significant way to explain it would just to say simply that it's Safek Avera, and that's what the Masorah Shas is trying to do with Rashi over here. Now the Gemara asks the question, Virabonon, Maishna Resha Delo Plige, or Maishna Seifa De Plige? Why is it that the Rabbonon argue on the latter case of Oto Ve'Beno, and they don't argue on the first case of Kisui Hadam? What is clear is that in the second case, they say that we are Choshesh for Oto Ve'Beno. When the Cheresh Shote Ve'Katan do a Shvita, we don't let you shecht the other animal because we are Choshesh for Oto Ve'Beno. Given that, that means that they think on majority or the robe of Shechitot of Cheresh Shote Ve'Katan are satisfactory. Given that, they're willing to say that we won't let you shecht Oto Ve'Beno. Now, if I extrapolate that to the beginning of the Mishnah, then why wouldn't you require Kisui Adam? How come the beginning of the Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir's position, without any dissenting opinion, that you don't have to do Kisui Adam? Which seems to imply that Ala Rov, Cheresh Oto Ve'Katan, do not successfully create a Shechita over here. So that seems to be the question. The Gemara answers, Reisha. If we obligate you to do Kisui Adam in the Reisha, Amrei Shechita Mal Yotohi. They're going to think it's a good Shechita. Va'ata L'meichel M'Shechitatan. And then people will come to eat from the Shechita. If they see people doing a Kisui Adam on the Shechita, the Cheresh Shote V'Katan, they're going to assume it was a good Shechita. And based on that, they're going to eat the meat as if it's kosher meat. So there will be a Churban that comes out of that if you allow people to do Kisui Adam on the Shechita of the Cheresh Shote V'Katan. Where it says, Seifa Nami. Why not in the Seifa make the same point? Kevin the Kamri Rabbonon, Asur L'Shechot Acharehem. Since the people are going to see that the Rabbonon said you may not shech the other animal, Amrei Shechita Mal Yotahi. Be'ate the Me'ochel M'Shechitatan. You're going to have the same problem, which is that if people say we can't shech the mother or the child in that scenario, that makes the assumption that the first one was a good Shechita. Then they're going to go and eat from the Shechita, the Cheresh Shote V'Katan, assuming that it's a good Shechita. If that is the reasoning, then the reasoning is equally applicable to the Seifa as is to the Reisha. Why did the Chachamim distinguish their opinion between the Reisha and the Seifa? Tosafot says he does not understand the comparison whatsoever, says they're totally different cases. In the Reisha, we're asking you to desist from a mitzvah. We're telling you, v'sheva al-taseh, don't do kisui hadam. So here we have a question about the shechita of the Cheresh Shote V'Katan. We're worried about people eating from their shechita. We tell you, desist from doing kisui hadam. The Chachamim have a right to do that and say, sheva al-taseh. In the latter part of the Mishnah, it's talking about a case where we're not sure about Cheresh Shote V'Katan, and then what, the Chachamim are going to come along and tell you, violate Oto Ve'Beno, because people might come to eat the Shechita. They're not going to impose Oto Ve'Beno and say, go ahead, shecht it. Don't worry about it. But you could be in violation of Oto Ve'Beno. That's a kum va'aseh. How could you compare the two cases to say that the latter case is similar to the earlier case in terms of a gzeirah? One's a sheva taseh, one's a kum va'aseh. He says, I don't see the comparison between them. So Tosfot says, that the Yesh Lomar, if it was not for the fact that the Rov Masim of the Cheresh Shote V'Katan were Mekukau, then they would not have instituted a Gzeirah to be Poter Milechasot. Meaning that if it was only a Safek, then they wouldn't put a Gzeirah in place of Sheva Al-Taseh to avoid a Mitzvah Doraita. You have a Mitzvah Doraita to do Kisui Adam. If it's a Safek, they just would have let you do Kisui Adam. If already it's a Rov that you shouldn't be doing Kisui Adam, then they're willing to say about the miut, don't do kisui adam. So that already indicates that the reisha assumes that there is a rove of problem over here. Once you have a reisha assuming that's a rove of problem, then in the seifa, it also seems to be that there's a rove of problem. So if the rove masay mekukalim, then we should be matir, you to shech, oto ve'beno, because ala rove, we follow in general the rove, and therefore it's not really a problem of kumbaseh anymore. You're just following the dictates of the Torah, which is you paskin by the robe, which is not worrying about that miyut when it is a good shechita. So that's how Tosfot frames it, which in the end turns out to be the way Rashi originally framed the question, which is, if you're assuming in the Reisha there's a robe of the masim and the cheresh of the katan are problematic, then in the sefer treat it the same way. So if the resha, you would have put a takana in place to say no kisuya dam because of robe is problematic, their shvita, then the sefer you should have done the same thing and say go ahead and shecht it. Why prevent them from shechting the otov ve'epeno? Because ala robe, we know that it's problematic and there's no shvita. So just keep it consistent in your view as to what cheresh otov ve'katan's din is with regards to their maaseh. If you're going to believe in the resha, it's a mekul kal ala robe. And the Seifa treat it the same way. So Gemara says, Seifa, the cases are different. Because in the Seifa, Amrei Bisrad Lilokami Bayile, in the Seifa we tell them not to shecht the second animal. When people see you not shechting the mother or the child, they don't necessarily know it's because of Otovet, but know that you're not shechting them. They just might say, you don't need the meat. You don't need the animal to be eaten today. That's why you didn't shecht them. It's not obvious when you don't check them, it's only because of Otov Ve'epeno. When you desist from doing a lav, you'd be desisting from doing the lav because the lav is the problem, or you could be desisting for a different reason. And so there's no evidence of the fact that you're desisting over here because of Otov Ve'epeno, and they won't come to eat it. Reisha Nami, Amrei Lenaker Chatzei Rohu Tzarich. So why not make the same claim about the Reisha? The reason he's doing Kisui Adam over here is not because he needs to do Kisui Adam. He wants to clean up his chatzer. There's dam all over his chatzer. Just let's say that he's cleaning it up. So Gemara says that doesn't work because Shachat Be'ashpa Ma'ika Lameimar. If he shechs in an area where he doesn't need to clean up, like he shechs over the dump, where he doesn't need to clean it up, and now he's starting to do Kisui Adam, it's going to be obvious that he's doing Kisui Adam. Bali Malech Ma'ika Lameimar. If he comes and asks us a shaila, do you need to do kisui adam or not doing kisui adam? We're going to pass him for him. He needs to do kisui adam. So in both those cases, it's going to come obvious that he's doing it b'shem kisui adam. If that's the case, people are going to mistakenly think it was a good shechita. So in the resha, they said, don't do kisui adam, because it's going to come evident that if you do kisui adam, the reason you're doing it is because of kisui adam, and then people are going to think it's a good shechita. In the Seifa, it's just about preference. Do I want to shech this animal or do I not want to shech the animal? The fact that it didn't is an evidence of the fact that there is Otov Ve'epeno over here. Mar says, according to your own reasoning, Seifa Nami. What are you going to do in the Seifa as well? Bali Lamalich, Ma'ik Lameimar. He comes to Beit Din and says, can I shech the mother? Can I shech the offspring here? We're going to tell him no. And when we say no, he's going to say, oh, that first shechita was a good shechita. Ella, Le Rabbonon Akula Milta Plige. Rabbonon disagree with the whole Mishnah. Venatri Le the Rabbi Meir Ad Demasik Le La the Milta. We waited for Rabbi Meir to finish his whole position. Vahadar Plige Ilave. And then they gave their dissenting opinion. So they dissent in both cases. They disagree on the ratio and say you do need to do Kisei Adam. And they disagree in the Seifa and say you cannot Shef Toto Be'epeno. And therefore now they are consistent in their opinion. Why did they only mention it at the end? Is because that is proper etiquette. You let the person finish their entire opinion, and then you disagree with them. You let them state everything they have to say, and then you disagree. And that's what they did over here. Now the Gemara says, Bishlama Rabbonon Luchumra. It turns out that even though the Rabbonon are consistent in their view, they are also the Chumra in both cases, which is that they make you do Kisui Adam in the case of the Reisha, and in the Sefer, they don't allow you to do Otov Ve'epeno. So in essence, they are going to Chumra in both cases. So their opinion could be understandable, irrespective of what the circumstances are. They're just saying we could be Choshesh in the Reisha to do Kisui Adam. And we're Choshesh in the Sefer not to do Otov Ve'epeno. And that will explain their opinion. El Rabbi Meir, my time. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir's position? Why does Rabbi Meir believe that you don't do Kisui Adam in the Reisha? And why does he allow you to do Otov Ve'epeno in the Seifa? So Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mechayev Haya Rabbi Meir, Ashchich Da'atam Mishum Neveila. This is what I noted already in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Meir believes that the Shechita Ve'cherishot Ve'katan results in an animal that is a Neveila. It is Tamei Tumat Neveila, which means there's no Shechita at all. He doesn't believe there's a Safek over here. He believes that it's so common and such a rove that when it comes to the shechita, the cheresh otav ve'katan, we deem the animal to be a nevela. And if you eat from that animal, you get makot for nevela. That's how much he thinks that their shechita is ois shechita. So now, in that situation, in case of kisui adam, no reason to do kisui adam if it's a nevela, and otobe beno is not relevant if it is a nevela. This goes back to what I said in the Mishnah, that even though Rabbi Meir believes shchita sheina ruya shma shchita, that means it has to be a shchita in a ruya. Here he doesn't even think it's a shchita sheina ruya. He thinks it's an oy shchita, that they ruin the shchita. They make the animal into a nevela. That's the case. No reason for kisui adam. No reason to worry about otobe beno. And you're going to be chaya for eating a nevela. My time up. What is the trigger for Rabbi Meir's belief in this case? Because the majority of their actions are problematic. And since the majority of their actions are problematic, therefore we are assuming, based on the rove, which we paskin like, that rove governs. So in the case of nevela, we're going to deem it a nevela, because ala rove it's a nevela, and you'll get malkot if you eat it. Ala rov, you will not need to do kisui adam, so we don't demand of you to do kisui adam. And ala rov, it was not a good shkita, and therefore there's no problem of oto be'beno. It's a hachra, based on the rov. And based on the rov, we're going to go in that direction. The Balei HaTosafot ask over here, the Gemara is going to introduce the question in a minute from a different direction, but Tosafot says over here, wait a minute, doesn't Rabbi Meir believe in choshishin l'miyut, which is that we worry about the miyut. Over here, even if rove of merkukalim, there's still a miyut she'ena merkukalim. And Rabbi Meir is of the belief that what we call it choshishin l'miyut. We worry about the minority. A majority doesn't come and wipe out the possibility of the minority. The minority is still something that we take into account. If that's the case, then he should require kisui adam, and it should prevent you from doing otove beno, because we're choshish l'miyut. How do we get over the problem of being choshishin l'miyut? There are two different approaches which basically do the same thing in the end, which is, even Rabbi Meir is choshesh the miyut, is not choshesh the miyuta the miyuta. If it is a minuscule probability, even Rabbi Meir agrees, we're not choshesh the miyut. So Tosafot creates that by saying that you have the rove that are milkukalim, plus you have the cheskat isur, which we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, that the animal has a cheskat isur because it was alive before it was shefted. So there's a chazok of Isur, plus the robe mikukalim. Those two together make it an overwhelming majority that are problematic. Given that, then it's a miyuta to miyuta that you're going to get a good shchita with a kosher animal afterwards. And even Rabbi Meir is not choshesh the miyuta to miyuta. Or the other way to say it is, even without the chazokah, it's a robe mukhlat. Which is, again, the robe can manifest itself in many different ways. Robe could be 51%, it could be 70%, it could be 90%, it could be 99%. And all we're saying over here is the rove here is an overwhelming rove to the point where there's only a miyuta, the miyuta left, and that's why Rabbi Meir is not choshesh the miyut over here. Then, Rabbi Shmuel Shemi Vardon in the Balei HaTosafot says, okay, I understand Rabbi Meir's position, but then what's the position of the Chachamim over here? If Rabbi Meir believes that rove maseyem mekukalim, what do the Chachamim believe? If they believe rove maseyem mekukalim, then, okay, their explanation of their position in the Mishnah is understandable. Require kisui adam, no shechting motov epino, but they should also have had a third psak, which is you could eat from their shchita. If it's al arov that they are metukanim, then you should eat from their shchita. If it's like Rabbi Meir, that rov are mekukalim, then they're not choshesh the miyut. Why don't they have the same opinion as Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah? It's very hard to understand what the position of the chachamim is. So, Shlomi Vardin answers that it's Misap Kulhul Rabbanon, Irov Maseyem Mekukalim, Irov Maseyem Mekukanim. They aren't certain as to which way the rove goes. Behashta lo mahanya chazaka midei. For that reason, the chazaka doesn't help you, because if you made it a 50-50 shot, and they say, we just don't know, it's a safek, 50-50, whether they do a good job, they do a bad job, again, if you add in the chazkat isur that the behema has, that'll be machriel the tzad isur. And then they'd be in the same position as Rabbi Meir. And then why do they say that you do need kisui adam? Why do they say uto beno beno pelais? They should have gone after the 50% plus the chazaka, which would push you in that direction. Rav Shmuel Meir Bardin says is, the chachamim aren't certain as to al arov it's kasher, or al arov it is mekulkal. Because they don't know which way the rove goes, the chazaka can't weigh in anymore. A chazaka is not a machriya. The chazaka is just a way to add up or give additional power to an existing position, which says that we leave the status quo intact. But it doesn't change the fact as to whether one side is a rove or the other side is a rove. It can't move the rove to the other direction. So in the case where we don't know if they're rov mitupanim or rov mekulkalim, they were machmir for all sides, which says, we're machmir that you have to do kisui adam. We're machmir that you have to worry about oto vebeno. But also machmir that you can't eat from their shkita, because we don't know if the rov is mekulkal. Then maybe the rov is mitukan. Therefore, mi chumra, we make you do all the mitzvot. And mi chumra, we also don't let you eat from their shkita. So he creates a safek, which is a sufficient safek, where chazakah will not help you out to be makriya in that safek. Because had it been 50-50, chazakah would have pushed you over the 50-50 line and said that it's rov mekulkalim. So therefore he creates it that the whole safek is whether rov mekulkalim or rov mitukanim. And in that way, he comes up with the position of the chachamim. So now, we said Rabbi Meir's position is based on the fact that he thinks rov maseyem mekulkalim. Amalei Rav Papa, the Rav Huna, braid the Rabbi Yeshua. Bamila Rav Huna braid the Rabbi Yeshua the Rav Papa. Not sure in which direction the question went. Ma'iri a rov. Why do you need a rov for Rabbi Meir? Afilu miut nami. What about if it was just a miut? Because Rabbi Meir chayish the miuta. Rabbi Meir worries about a miut. So even if there was a miut over here, we'd be choshesh for the miut. So where it says, smoch miuta la chazaka, bidrele ruba. Because then you can combine the miut with the chazaka, that would override the rov. So why do you need it to be that they're rov maseyem mekulkalim? Even if a miut of maseyem was mekulkalim, you would add up miut maseyem along with chazaka, and the two of those together then would overwhelm the rov. Now, the chazaka is that it's chezkat isur. Rashi, like in other places in Shas, says that the chezkat isur over here is Eiver min achai. While the animal is alive, it has a cheskat isur of Eiver min achai. Therefore, if you do an improper shechita, you haven't removed the Eiver min achai from it. That is the problem. The truth is that that's not really true. Because Eiver min achai ends, whether you did a good shechita or you didn't do a good shechita, the animal's dead at this point, and Eiver min achai goes away. So the Bali Tosafot are very circumspect about the fact that Eiver min achai is the problem. Because Eiver min achai then flips into Isur Neveilo, and it's not really the same Isur. And therefore the Bali HaTosafot have here, and a number of other places in Shas, we saw it earlier in the Masechta, have this concept called Eina Shchuta. That there is a Isur of Eina Shchuta. You're not allowed to eat an animal because it wasn't Shechted. And that Isur remains even after the fact. Even if the animal is dead, it's still Eina Shchuta. And Eina Shchuta, according to them, is the problem or the Chezkat Isur, and that persists even after the death of the animal. So that's again a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot that we see in a number of places as to what the Isur is or the Chezkat Isur on an animal that's alive. Rashi always says it's Eiver min achai. The Bali Tosafot say it's Eina Shchuta. So now how do we know that Rabbi Meir is Choshesh the Miuta? It's none. We have a Mishnah in Tarot. Tinok Shenimtza Betzada Isa. I'm going to read it like Rashi, and then we'll go back and read it like the Bali HaTosafot, Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi says, you have a tinok that's next to a pile of dough. Ubatzeg biyado. And he has some dough in his hands. Rabbi Meir mitaher, v'chachamim mitamim. Rabbi Meir says, it's tahor, it's not a problem. Chachamim say that it is tamei. Mipnei shir darko shel tinok litapeach. Because it is the normal way for a child to touch things, to engage with things irrespective of what they are. Rashi claims over here that the tapeach means that he plays in the garbage dump and he touches things that are tameim. The baby is in all likelihood tamei because it touches everything that it comes into contact with, including things it probably shouldn't be touching. And especially if it plays in the ashpa, it means that it's going to become tamei. So the baby is assumed to be tamei. Given that, now you have a piece of dough in his hand. A piece of dough in his hands seems to indicate that he touched the big pile of dough and took a piece off, and that's why he has dough in his hands right now. That's the assumption of the Chachamim, that he touched the dough, pulled off a piece, and that's why what's in his hand is Tamei, and then what is in the pile behind is also Tamei. That's the view of the Chachamim. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir says that he is Tahor, the main size Tahor, because, according to Rabbi Meir, yes, rov tinokot are mitapchim, which means that they go into the ashpa and become tamei, but there is a miut of tinokot that don't go into the ashpa and don't become tamei and remain tahor. V'amrina, my time at the Rabbi Meir, what is the reason behind Rabbi Meir? Kasar rov tinokot mitapchim, umiut ein mitapchim. Majority of tinokot engage in tzpicha, according to Rashi, means that they become tamei. There's a miut that are not tamei. Beisa zo becheskat tara omedet. And this isa stays under the chazaka that had it originally, that it is tahor. Smoch miuta lechazaka. If you add the miut to the chazaka, ve'itrele ruba. And then that undermines the robe over here. So that is the claim that Rabbi Meir will take a miut and then add it to the chazaka, and adding the chazaka to the miut then overrides the robe. So in this case, Rabbi Meir is saying there's a high likelihood that the baby played in the garbage dump or became tamei. There's a low likelihood that maybe he didn't. But that low likelihood combined with the cheskat tara of the dough is enough to override the robe of chances that this baby is tamei. That is the view of Rashi as to what's going on here. The Balei HaTosafot disagree, and they say, first of all, mitapchim be'ashpot is not the word that you would use. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says, rov tinokot mitapchim be'isa, that they, most of them, bang or play with dough. Tipuach shaykh bo'chlim u'mashkim. Tipuach is something you do to liquids and to foods. It's not something you do to the garbage dump. He says it's the wrong verb to use for the garbage dump, and he proves it from other places in Shas as well as in the Yerushalmi. But he says, well then, if the tinok is just a question, did he touch the dough or he didn't touch the dough, what about the status of the tinok? We don't know if he's tamei or tahor, so then why should it be influential over here? So that, he says, is that, and he quotes from the Tosefta in Tarot, it says, avi tinok vadai tamei. It's not even a larov, he's tamei, he's definitely tamei. Stam tinokot tameim, nation hashim nidot, migafafot u'mineshakot odam. Babies are cute, so women always want to hold them, hug them, and give them kisses. And women have a problem of tumat nida, and therefore alavadai, this baby is tamei. So that's how the Rabbeinu Tam deals with the tuma aspect over here. Rashi is saying, how did the baby become tamei? That's the whole mitapchim over here. That's whether he went to the garbage dump or he didn't go to the garbage dump. That's how he became tamei. Rabbeinu Tam starts with a premise that the baby is tamei because he was hugged by a woman, or touched by a woman who was tmeya tumat nida. Now the question is, how did he get the dough into his hand? So ala rov mitapchim. Ala rov, babies, when they see dough, they're going to go touch it, take it, and that's why there's dough in his hand right now, because he pulled it off the bigger piece of dough. The Rabbi Meir says, well, there are two ways the baby could have dough. Either he got it himself, which is the rove of chances. There's a mere chance that it was handed to him by someone else. So that's the rove in the miut over here. Chamin say, rove tinokot mitapchim. It's a done deal, and therefore the robe overrides the miut, and we say that it's definitely tamei, the big pile of dough. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir says, rechoshin the miut. There's a miut of chance that an adult came in, handed him the dough, and that's why he has dough in his hands, and he didn't take it from the big pile. Plus, you have the chazoka that the dough was tahor before. We add those together, and we have a situation in which the dough should be tahor in this case. So that's Rabbi Meir's opinion. In both cases, whether it's Rashi or the Balei Tosafot, you're taking a mute chance that it's tahor, adding it to the chezkat tahor, which is the original state of this dough, and together they knock out the rove. So why not say the same thing over here? You have a mute of chances that the shchita was no good, and you have a chazoka that the animal is asur. If I add those together, that's enough to say that it is asur over here, or meaning that there was no good shchita. Why do you need Rabbi Meir to say rove mikul kalim? Even if miut mikul kalim, Rabbi Meir would still classify it as if it is a rove. He'd take the miut mikul kalim, add it to the chazok of isur, and then you wipe out the rove that was mitukan, and it would be a problem. Rabbi says, what's the comparison over here? Im amru safek tuma litaher, yamru safek isur lahatir? How are you comparing cases over here? One case is to say something is tamei and tahor. Over there you can say that I take the miut and the chazaka and it remains tahor. Meaning that tahara and tuma'ah are a much simpler issue where you can say, I'll opt to say it's tahor versus tamei. Over here you're going to do the same thing and then say that it's worth violating an isur based on that. Meaning that we're going to say, go ahead and shech the animal. And it will be a violation of otol be'ed beno. It's one thing to put a chazaka and a miut together to say something's tahor. When it's saying matir and isur, and that's what Rashi says over here. Hilkach, he loved the rov maseh mekukalim. Had it not been for the fact that rov maseh mekukalim, deika ruba v'chazoka, lo yamati l'shchot achareyem, Rabbi Meir, chayish lemiuta, because Rav Meir is chayish lemiuta, v'shema yafesh shachato. And again, it turns the karal pia, which is that even if you believe that miut maseim are mekukalim, and then chazoka is that there's an Isra over here, you still have a miut that is kasher. And a miut, according to Rav Meir, we're choshish for. So if you're choshish for that miut, who's going to let you violate an Isur in this case? And that goes back to what the Balei Tosafot said before, and Rashi is saying it over here, that how do you get over that problem at all for Rav Meir? Even if you say Rov is Mekul Kalim, you still have a miut, that's okay, and Rav Meir's choshish the miut. The answer to that is Rav Meir's chayish the miuta, but he's not chayish the miuta. So when you have a Rov and a Chazaka telling you that it wasn't a good Shechita, then in that case, it's a minority of a minority, and even Rabbi Meir is not choshish for that. And that's how we get to Rabbi Meir's opinion, and that's why he has to say, Rov Maaseyem Mekul Kalim. Now, Tosafot points out over here, wait a minute, even by Tara and Tuma, you're right, inherently Tara and Tuma itself doesn't have an Isur, but does precipitate Isurim, like by Tuma, Migdash, there are implications from this Isur. So why would you then say, oh, Tuma and Tara, don't worry about it. Isur, let's worry about it. Tumandara also have a problem with Isur. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot suggestion, Vez Rabbeinu Chaim Mishum de Tinok, Avi Dovar Shein Ba'u Dat Mishael. A Tinok is something that you ask and get an answer from, and therefore, Speko the Taher, which is that the Dinim of Safek, Tumandara, are learned from a Sota. So only situations in which you are Dome le Sota, does it have a Din of Safek Tuma the Chumra. So in first, the distinction is made between Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid. Sota is only relevant in Rishut HaYachid. That means Safek Tuma Rishut HaRabim is Tahor. Safek Tuma Rishut HaYachid is Tameh. Even in Safek Tuma Rishut HaYachid is only Tameh when it's Da'at Ol Nishael. When you can ask the person about what happened. Like the case of the Sota, where you have someone of Da'at that can answer the question. If it's someone that you can't ask the question about, then even in Safek Tuma Rishut HaYachid, it's L'Taher. And so that's the suggestion over here, is that we bring it to a 50-50 point. The Chazaka and the Miut bring it to 50-50, so I have a Safek over here. Safek Tuma, Bir Shuti Yachid, with Ain Dato Nishael, because it's a Tinok over there, that makes it is Tahor. Safek 50-50, Bir Shuti Yachid, for an Isur, that's go the Chumra, the Esur. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. And Tosafot is then stuck a little bit, because the Gemara Kedushin, based on Rabbi Yochanan, makes a suggestion that the Chachamim in this case made a Tinok to Ilu Dato Nishael. They changed the status of a Tinok as if it's someone that you could ask the question of. So Tosafot asks, why do you need that? The Rabbanim believe that the Rov, Tinokot or Mitapchim, Chazaka does not trump Rov, because they're not Choshesh the Miut, and therefore Rov would govern in this case. Why do they need the issue of a Dato Nishael? So he makes a suggestion, Eshlamad Rov, Tinokot, Mitapchim, Lo'avi Rov Gamur. Since Rov, Tinokot, Mitapchim is not a overwhelming Rov, Mushum de Nira Ki'ilu Rov, since it is close enough or looks like a Rov, Asau Kamoshesh Bo Dat Nishael. That's why they moved over the Tinok to Ilu, he was Dato Nishael, to be Machriya on the side of that close to Rov or that very small Rov, to make it into a Rov Mukhlat. They made the decision that the Tinok will not be Ain Dato Nishael, but Dato Nishael. That's what's Machriya in this case, to say that the Suffolk will be the Tuma, and not the Tara, and that's why the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir over here. And then Tosafot goes on to make even a stronger suggestion that even without the Chazaka, Rabbi Meir would say it's Tahor over here, because it's a 50-50 Safek, and we have other memorot that indicate, unless it's Vadei Tameh, you don't have to desist from eating it. And therefore over here, we'd also be Machriya Letzad Tahara. So the only reason to mention the Chazaka, but the Tzad of the Miut, is to tell you that it's not on the Tzad of the Rov. It's not on the other side. Because if the Chazaka was with the Rov, it would make it into a Miuta de Miuta, and then even Rabbi Meir would not be Choshesh the Miut. But if you are Choshesh the Miut, and there's no Chazaka on the side of the Miut, then it becomes like a Safek of 50-50. Although, again, it's much more compelling to say that it, together with the Chazaka, the Miut, it evens out the Rov, and makes it like 50-50. Tosafot is even willing to suggest that without the Chazaka, the Miut is elevated by Rabbi Meir to make it into a Safek of 50-50. And in truth, those that made the suggestion, and that is the position of Rabbi Meir, and we are undermining it over here, they obviously believe when you have a Chazaka and a Miut, it wipes out the robe completely. It's as if the robe doesn't exist, and therefore you can, even by Isurim, be Machriya. On the other hand, according to the questioners over here, they clearly believe when you have a chazaka and a miut, and then the rove, it makes it like a 50-50 safek. And when you have a 50-50 safek, then you're governed by different dinim, by tumah, than you are by isur. By tumah, it's going to go letzad tahara. By isur, it's going to go letzad chumra and be asur. All right. Now, the Gemara says, Hore Rabbi k'Rabbi Meir. At one point, Rabbi paskin like Rabbi Meir. Hore Rabbi k'Chachamim. And then at one point, he paskin like the Chachamim. So we know Rabbi paskin sometimes like the Chachamim, sometimes like Rabbi Meir. What we want to know is, Hey Minayu Dachrito. Which one was the latter of his Piskei Halacha? Obviously, he changed his mind. So we want to know which one was the second one, because if we know that, then we'll know which one was his final psak over here. So Tashma, the Rabbi Abba, braid the Rabbi Chia bar Abba, the Rabbi Zera. So you have Rabbi Abba, the son of Rabbi Chia bar Abba, which means he was named after his grandfather, and Rabbi Zera, b'kaimei b'shuka de Kezari. They were out in the marketplace of Kezari, a pit called the Beit Midrasha, at the doorway to the Beit Midrash. Just interesting in terms of the location of the Beit Midrash. The Beit Midrash was right in the middle of the Shuk. And if they were standing by the doorway to the Beit Midrash, they were out in the Shuk. It wasn't like the Beit Midrash was out of the city or out of the fields. It was literally in center city, right in the middle of the Shuk. Nafak Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Ami, who was the Doresh, or the Chacham, came outside. Ashtkechino, he found him. Amalahu, lava minalukhu. Didn't I tell you, Beidan Beit Midrasha, lo takimu evrai? When they were teaching in the Beit Midrash, you guys should not be outside. Doma ika inish, demitzrach le shmaita. Maybe there's somebody inside who didn't get the shear clearly and is reviewing his memrot from the shear. And then he's going to end up remembering the wrong thing or not knowing what was happening. You guys are like the Chazara Rebbeim. You could be in there, and if someone has a question, you could help them out. You could direct them. Or maybe even if there wasn't the shear going on, if they were just reviewing, they're learning, and a question comes up, instead of being left unresolved, you could have solved the problem. You could help everybody out and keep things smooth inside of the Beit Midrash. So better that you're inside so that if people have questions, you can give them direction, clarify for them, rather than you guys are standing outside. I understand that you don't need to be in the shir. You guys know this already. But on the other hand, you could really help out the Talmidim in there, and I told you to be inside. So Rabbi Zera out. Rabbi Zera went into the Beit Midrash based on the request. Rabbi Abba, lo, out. He didn't go in. Yatve becoming bailu. So then they asked the question of Rabbi Zera once he entered. Hey Minayu Achrita. Exactly the question that we had before. We have both Piskei Halacha of Rabbi. Which one was the latter of his Piskei Halacha? Amarlo Rabbi Zera. Lo shavaktun li. Leishayle lesaba. You didn't let me ask the older one. Dilma shmile ma'avua ve'avua minei de Rabbi Yochanan. Because maybe his father heard it from Rabbi Yochanan. And then we would have known the answer. Meaning that you broke up my chavruta. My chavruta was Rabbi Abba outside, and Rabbi Abba would have had the answer to this question. But now that you made me come inside, and he's gone, I can't ask him the question anymore. Had I stayed outside with him, and then you asked me the question, I could have asked him for the answer. The Rabbi Chir Baba, who is Rabbi Abba's father, called Tlatin Yomin Kamahadir Tamudei Kamehde Rabbi Yochanan, used to review his learning in front of Rabbi Yochanan every 30 days. So he was someone who knew exactly what was going on, and Rabbi Yochanan clearly had a Mesora from Rabbi. Rabbi Yochanan's one of the youngest Talmidim in the Shir of Rabbi. So he probably heard it from Rabbi, and he would have learned the latter Psak of Rabbi over there, and then we could have gotten the information. So Gemara says, okay, that's a nice story, but my Rabbi Allah. Well, in the end, which one was the latter of the two Piskei Halacha of Rabbi? Tashma, the Shalach Rabbi Elazar the Gola. Rabbi Elazar was a Talmud Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan, sent to Babel, Hore Rabbi ke Rabbi Meir. That Rabbi Paskin like Rabbi Meir. Veha kirabona namiori. Wait a minute. How could he send to the Gola that he Paskin like Rabbi Meir if he also Paskin like the Rabbona? Elalav shmamina. The fact that he's sending that message to the Gola means hadachrita shmamina. Must be that was the latter of the two Piskei Halacha. Therefore, he was giving them the definitive psak that the Halacha is like Rabbi Meir according to Rabbi. And therefore, he was sending them that psak Halacha without the other information. And we can conclude from that that Rabbi believes Halacha is like Rabbi Meir. Shachat mea chayot b'makom echad. If he shechted 100 chayot in a single location, kisoy echad l'kulan. You do a single kisoy adam for all of them. You don't need to do a separate kisoy adam for each and every one of them. You can wait until the end of all the shechitot and then do a kisoy adam on all of them. Me'ofot b'makom echad. If you have 100 ofot, again, the same thing. You shech all 100 of them. At the end of the day, you do one kisoy dime for all of them. Kisoy echad lekulan. One kisoy covers all of them. Chaya ve'of. What happens if you shechting a chaya and of? So now you're dealing with one animal, one bird. B'makom echad, kisoy echad lekulan. If it's in a single location, you can do one kisoy for both of them. The same way you can do one kisoy for multiple chayot, one kisoy for multiple ofot. You can do one kisoy for both a chaya and an of. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shachat Chaya Yichasena, V'achakach Yishkot Et Ha'Of. Rabbi Yehuda says, Chaya and Of are separate. You can do as many Chayot as you want together, as many as Ofot together, but you can't mix and match Chayot and Ofot. Let's see why. But Rabbi Yehuda obviously thinks that Chaya and Of are different entities, and because of that, he disagrees with the Chachamim's position over here. Tan Rabbanan, Chaya, when the Pasuk says, Shei Yatzud said Chaya V'Of, when it's speaking about the kisui adam, there it says chaya of. So the word chaya, the chachamim say, kol mashma chaya. That the word chaya means both a singular animal as well as multiple animals. It's like the word fish or sheep in English that can be used to describe a single sheep or a single fish or to describe multiples. So the word chaya, even though it's written in the singular, ben meruba, ben muet. It doesn't matter how many or how few. It has both the meaning of being one or many. Of, kol b'mashma. Again, the same thing with the word of. Of can be a reference to one or can be a reference to many. Then for ben meruba, ben muet. Doesn't matter how many or how few, they are subsumed under the word of. So there, mikan amro, shachat mea chayot, b'makom echad, kitzui echad ukulan. Therefore, they come to the conclusion, if you do a shechita of 100 chayot in one place, you can do one kisoy for all of them. Me'ofot b'makom echad, kisoy echad lekulan. If you do 100 birds in one location, you can do a kisoy for all of them. Because the word, when it says, Asher yitzud zed chaya ha'of, Asher ye'achel v'shafach adamo v'kisoy be'afar, v'kisoy be'afar applies to chaya and of. And chaya can mean multiple chayot, of can mean multiple ofot, you're all fine. Chaya ve'of b'makom echad, if you have a chaya and of in a single location, kisoy echad lekulan. The same thing will apply over there for chaya and oath. Now, the Braita doesn't explain why, but Rabbi Yehuda is going to dissent, and through that we'll understand. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shachat chaya yichasena, v'achakach yishkot et ha'of. You first do the chaya, and then you cover that. Then you do the shkitat oath, and you cover that separately. Shenemar chaya o oath. Because there's an o that sits between the chaya and oath, which divides them, which is lechalek. So Amar lo, the Chachamim respond to him, Hari Omer, ki nefesh kol basar damo b'nafshohu. That every entity, its life force is in its blood. Omer says, my kamahadrile. How did the Chachamim answer the point of Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda brings one pasuk, they just bring a different pasuk. Doesn't seem to be addressing the claim that he's making that there's an O in there, lechalek. So achi kamrei le rabbonon. So it's like a chasurei mechzera in the Braita. Just because it's a Braita, you don't need to say chasurei mechzera. In a Mishnah, it's chasurei mechzera. In a Braita, we assume there's stuff missing from the Braita in general, because the Braita don't have the integrity of a Mishnah. Hi, O, mi baile lechalek. That O we need for lechalek. Meaning that Rabbi Yehuda says the O teaches you that you have to do a separate kisui for the chaya, separate kisui for the O. The Chachamim say to him, you can't do that. We need the word O to tell you that there's a chiluk between chaya and O. This goes back to what we discussed earlier in the Masechta, regards to when you have a vav between them, is it a vav achibur or a vav achiluk? Meaning that when you have two words that were put together, what would you have thought? So over here, had it written chaya ve'of, what would your consideration been? The Chachamim say, had it written chaya ve'of, you would have thought you have to have both a chaya and of before you need to do a kisoy adam. The o comes to tell you that independently chaya requires and independently an of requires. So what is Rabbi Yehuda going to do about the chalek? He needs the O for his limud, that they're separate kisuyim totally. You can't overlap their kisuyim. Where does he get the chalek from? He says, mi damo nafko. The fact that damo is written in the singular teaches that din to you. It says, asher yitzud seid chaya o, asher yachel v'shafach et damo. It should have said v'shafach et damam. If it said damam, then you would know of and chaya. When it says damo, it means dam shelo. Shelo, which is either a reference to the chaya or the of. So by definition, it's not speaking about both of them. Rabbanon, damo tuva mashma. No, damo has different meanings. Damo doesn't always mean dam shelo in the singular. It even could mean damim. Dichtiv, ki nefesh ko basar, damo b'nafshohu. that the life force of all animals is in the blood. Over there, it's not speaking about that particular animal or one animal. It's speaking about all animals. And it calls it damo b'nafsho. The truth is that in the pasuk, it still is calling nefesh, right, of the kol basar b'damo. But nevertheless, they show that the word damo does not always mean a singular animal, and therefore it would not be determinant over here. And so therefore, they have a machloket as to whether damo, they have a machloket as to whether damo is a sufficient reason l'chalek. If you believe it is, then the O is extraneous. Once it's extraneous, Rabbi Yehuda says, that's coming to teach you that the kisui adam for chayan of have to be separate. The chachamim who don't think damo is sufficient reason l'chalek, they need the O to tell you that chayan of individually will be mechayev yu kisui. You don't need to have a chaya and an oaf to be chayav. Once they do that, they don't have the extraneous o. If they don't have that, they say, one kisui adam for chaya and oaf. It works for both. It works for everything. You don't need to distinguish between them. That's the source for the distinction in their opinion in our Mishnah. Amei Rabbi Chanina. Modeh Rabbi Yehuda le'in brocho, sheinu mevarayich elo bracha achat. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that even though they have a separate din for chaya and oaf, nevertheless, you make a single brocha for both of them. So Rashi over here says that the inyan brocha ala shchita ain't sarich l'avareich l'achar kisui. That if you do kisui adam after you do the shchita, then you don't have to make a brocha on the next shchita. So for instance, if you shechted a chaya, then because of Rabbi Yehuda, you have to do kisui adam on the chaya before you start the shchita of the oath. You don't have to make a brocha on the shchita oath. It's not considered to be a hefsek the kisui adam that you do in between. That's the way Rashi is reading the Gemara over here, that even though he disagrees with regards to the necessity for a separate kisui for each one of them, which you would have thought then would separate between the shchitot, nevertheless it does not act as a hefsek between them. From here, all it sounds like is that kisui adam is not a hefsek for shchita. It doesn't mean that shchita is not a hefsek for kisui adam. It depends why you think the Kisui Adam is not a hefsek for Shkita. It could be, and this is what we discussed before, that Kisui is a part and parcel of the Shkita. Therefore, it doesn't act as a hefsek. So therefore, for the bracha of Shkita, it doesn't act as a hefsek. But that doesn't mean that when you do a separate Shkita, that's not a hefsek for Kisui. It could be unidirectional. It could be that subsumed under Shkita is Kisui, and that's why it's not a hefsek for the next Shkita. That doesn't mean vice versa, that shkita is subsumed under kisui, and maybe for kisui you would have to make a separate brocha. Anyway, that's the way Rashi reads it. If you learn it in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says over here, Apagal Dar Yehuda l'inyan kisui tzarich chiluk l'inyan levarech ala shkita enu tzarich l'chayavot ala bracha achat. From the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's not clear that he necessarily is saying what Rashi is saying. All he is saying is that even if, according to Rabbi Yehuda, kisui v'chaya and kisui and oaf are separate, it doesn't mean that their shkitot are separate. All he is saying is that the shkita of an oaf and the shkita of a behema, they don't require a separate bracha. He doesn't mention anything about the kisui in between. Maybe that's implied because Rabbi Yehuda requires you to do a kisui in between. But he states it as just a simple fact that the shkita of an oaf and a chaya are not like the kisui where they're separated. The shkita are considered to be the same and you can make a single bracha on the shkita. Now that might be independent of the kisui issue. In Rashi says there was a kisui in between, that's why you would have thought otherwise. Over here, the Rabbeinu Gershom says it without the kisui in between, and he's saying that one brocha works for both. You might have had a havamina, that shkita d'of and shkita d'chaya are totally separate shkitot, and you can't make a single brocha. So then maybe in a situation where you have like a behema and an oaf, maybe there you can make a single brocha, and you would have thought to make two. And it has nothing to do with the hefsek of kisui, because he doesn't mention that. You could read Rashi's din into the Rabbeinu Gershom as well. I'm just pointing it out that he doesn't mention the kisui in between. So Amarle Ravina, the Rav Acha Brei de Rava. Amarle Rav Acha Brei de Rava, the Rav Ashi. So again, we don't know who said this. Maishna mitalmide de Rav. How is this different than the situation of the Talmidim of Rav? The Rav Brona, the Rav Chananel, Talmide de Rav. They were both Talmidim of Rav. They were eating a meal. They were having lunch. They were having dinner, whatever it was that they were eating. Kayolayu Rav Yeva Sava. The elder Rav Yeva was the mishamesh. He was their waiter for the meal. He was taking care of them. Amrulei Habdivarech. He said, bring us a kos. We're ready to bench. So he goes in. He brings them a kos. Hadu Amrulei Habdivishte. Changed our mind. We don't want to bench on it. We want to drink this kos. We're still thirsty. We're not going to bench on the coast. We're going to drink the coast. Amlo, Rav Yehuda Saba, Haki Amarav. So Rav Yehuda Saba says, well, hey, be careful. This is the din that Rav said. Tamen damar havli varech, itzer le the mishtei chamra. Once you say, let's go and bench, you can't drink anymore. Hachanami. So why don't you put the same din in place over here? Tamen de itfale the kisoi, ichayim le brocha. As soon as you deal with kisoi, then you've left the world of shechita, and now you should have trigger a new brocha for the other shechita. Or according to the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom is learning, if you say that he's not saying exactly like Rashi, says that itfalei the kisoi doesn't mean literally that he did kisoi adam, but since he should do kisoi adam, it's ki'ilu yesh hefsek b'nehem. And that means that you would have to make a new brocha on the shechita, not because you actually did the kisoi, but because you should do the kisoi. And it's ki'ilu, he says over here. Came on the itfale the kisui the chaya, domik mishi kiso, umafsika kisui ben brocha the chaya the brocha dov. Since you should take care of the kisui of the chaya separately, it's as if you did, and it's as if there is a hefsek. So continuing his view that the question about the brocha here is about one shkita to the next shkita without a kisui in between, over here he suggests that the Gemara's question is about, since you should deal with the kisui of the chaya separately from the oaf, maybe that we deem it as if you did do this kisui, and that's what generates the hefsek over here. But it's the point that the Rabbeinu Gershom is making that one shechita covers chaya and oaf, irrespective of the issue of kisui, whereas Rashi says, despite the kisui, one bracha works. So, ichayev le bracha, you should have to make a new bracha on the shechita. Mar says, halchi ashta, how can you compare the cases? Hatam, mishta gruke behadei adadi lo efshar. You can't make a bracha and drink simultaneously. It's either one or the other. So if you're going to bench, you're not drinking. If you're drinking, you're not benching. So when you say, I'm going to bench, that already precludes the possibility of you drinking anymore. That means the drinking is over, and that's why you need a new bracha. Hacha efshar the shachit b'chado, or mifsei b'chado. You can do both of them simultaneously. With one hand, you can do the shechita. With the other hand, you can do the kisui adam. Not recommended. We wouldn't tell you to do that. But the fact that it is possible means that they're not mutually exclusive items. Since they're not mutually exclusive items, that means when you move from the shechita to do the kisui doesn't preclude your ability to continue doing shechitot. And that means that you have not left the world of shechita. And Rashi actually formulates it that the ability to do things at once is an indication of whether there is or isn't esachadat over here. The fact that you can't drink and speak at the same time is already an indication that you've had hesachadat from the eating or drinking. On the other hand, by shkita, doing the kisoi is not a hesachadat from shkita because your capacity to do shkita at the same time makes it as if there isn't any hesachadat. Let's take a step back to the problem of havlan v'nevarich. When a person says, let's bench, what has happened at that point? The Bali Tosafot here take a very strong stand about what happened over here, and the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Hanan all over here agree with their view. But it's against Rashi, the Rashbam, and the Gemara Pesachim, who interpret this din of Rav that's found there as well, in a totally different way. Rashi says that once you say Havlan Nevarech, you're obligated to bench, and you can't eat, you can't drink, until you have benched. There's an obligation to bench. That's what it sounds like over here. They were about to bench. Havlan Nevarech is like Rabotai Nevarech. It's the equivalent of that. Once you've done that, you're already in the world of benching. You need to bench before you can eat again. That is the simple way to read the Gemara. There are other Gemarot that seem to support that, including the Gemarot about if you're at a wedding and you're all sitting around a table and everybody leaves to dance. If you leave people at the table, then you don't have an obligation to make a new bracha. If you're only meeting at the table, then everybody needs a bracha. And over there, it sounds like you have to make a bracha krona. You have to bench. And then you can, if you want to eat again, you can make a bracha again. That is supportive of this view of Rashi and the Rashbam. So that's the view of Rashi and the Rashbam. There are other Rishonim that follow that shita of the Rashi and the Rashbam. The Bali Tosafot take a very strong position against that and say, Havlan Nevarech, all it does is ends the meal. Ending the meal just stops your ability to use the bracha Rishona anymore. It doesn't force you into a position where you have to bench. It forces you in a position that if you want to eat or if you want to do anything else, you need to make a new bracha Rishona. So all he was saying to them was, if you want to drink wine now, you can't drink wine. You're not in the meal anymore. You have to make a new borei priya gofen in order to drink the wine. Benching? You can bench once over two different meals. There's no reason why benching can't cover what you ate earlier and what you ate later. The only din by benching is if you become hungry and you're no longer satisfied from the meal that you ate before, you can't bench anymore. But as long as you're still satisfied from the meal, then you can continue to bench for that meal. So Tosfot says there's no obligation to bench over here. It's only an obligation to make a new bracha rishona. It's a very fundamental machloket. Now Tosfot has to deal with all those cases where the Gemara seems to indicate that we tell you to bench. What he says is it's Eitzah Tova Kamash Malan. In all those cases, it's just giving you good advice. Because since you don't know how long you're going to be gone for, or since everybody's leaving the table and you don't know if someone's going to stay behind, better to bench now because we don't know when you're going to return. By the time you return, you may be hungry and it won't be too late to bench. So better to bench before you leave, and then when you come back, you make a new bracha. On the other hand, if you didn't bench, there's no obligation to bench and then make a bracha rishona. You make a bracha rishona and then bench for both of them afterwards. It's a big nafkamino la halacha. And then there are opinions that come in the middle. There are opinions like that brought by the Rabbeinu Yonah that suggest that there's a difference between eating and drinking. That when you say havlan v'nevareich, that is a hefsek for shtiya. It's not a hefsek for achila, and therefore by shtiya, you have the ability to make a bracha rishona and continue drinking. The Rosh says he heard people make a distinction between the drinking and eating. He says, I don't see it, I don't hear it. There's nowhere in the Gemara that makes any distinction like that. I don't think there's any such distinction between eating and drinking. Then that leads us to the next question about washing one's hands. It says in the Gemara that if you wash netilat mayim achronim, then you have to bench, and you can't then go back and make a new bracha. So now, for Rashi, that makes sense. It's no different than saying, Rabotai Nevarech, washing netilat yadayim for mayim achronim is the equivalent of saying, let us bench. And since both of those are the end of the meal, once you've ended the meal, you got to bench and move forward. So for Rashi, it all comes hand in hand. For the Baal Tosafot, why is it when you wash mayim achronim, you're finished? And when you say havlan v'nevareich, you're not finished. So the Beit Yosef, others point out that there's a difference between them. There is a din, which is tefkef le'netila brocha, that immediately after you do netilat yadayim, you have to do a brocha. Many interpret that not to be referring to mayim rishonim, rather mayim achronim. That immediately after you do mayim achronim, you need to bench immediately. So what the Beit Yosef says is when you wash your hands for benching, it's as if you've started benching. And if you've started benching already, then you have to bench. You can't then pull out and then try to eat something or make a bracha. The other hand, havlan v'nevareich is not the beginning of benching. It's an invitation. Let us end the meal. It's almost like a presentation of a question. Are you ready to end the meal together? In that case, if the answer is no, even though you now took your mind and wanted to end the meal, we're going to allow you to make a bracha rishona and continue to eat. We won't force you to bench. And in that way, they explain this distinction between for their Baal Tosafot, between why Havlan Nevareich is not the end of the meal, and you can make a new bracha rishona, whereas washing Yadayim forces you into a position where you have to bench. The other thing to know is, that Gemara speaks about this in Psachim, but it's a very important point, is that you have to be a controlling figure in order for it to end the meal. For instance, if you're in the house, and you're a child in your father's house, or you're a guest in a host house, if you say, let us bench, that is not the end of the meal. Because you still need the acquiescence of the parent, or you need the acquiescence of the host. So then it's clearly presented as a question and not a statement. Because you say, Rabotai Nevareich, or you say, let us bench, you're really proposing that to the Baal HaBayit. So now, if the Baal HaBayit dissents, the meal's not over. So then what's called your taloi b'Baal HaBayit, or your taloi in the parent, because you're not the controlling person in terms of benching. Might even be true that the Baal HaBayit is not in charge if his wife is the one who says that I still have dessert to serve, we're going to have dessert first. So the Baal HaBayit says, let us bench, and the wife says, I still have dessert. Is the Baal HaBayit the determinant over there, or is the wife in control? I think you know the answer to the question, but in that case, also, it may not be an indication at the end of the meal, it's a suggestion rather than a hefsek in that case. Even for yourself, because you're not the determining factor as to whether the meal ends. You need the acquiescence of someone else. So in those cases, anytime you make that statement, even though you were trying to end the meal, you are uncertain as to whether you will be successful in ending the meal, and that means you didn't end the meal. That's an important consideration in many cases for these issues. The other thing to deal with over here is that Baal HaTosafot, say over here, Mikana Yomer Rabbeinu Yom Tov, Shimamad Me'achiloto V'Hitpalel. Someone interrupts the meal to go daven, Shechozeru Baal HaChol Tzarich Levarech Birkat HaMazon V'Litoli Adavel Levarech HaMotzi. You have to bench, wash hands, and make a new bracha rishona. You show the mechal, but slui, but hadaya, dodi, lo efshar. Can't daven and eat at the same time. That's the consideration over here. Can you do them simultaneously or can you not do them simultaneously? And actually, this is the source for the Rif's Sak, that you have to make a separate bracha on all the Arba Kosot on the night of Pesach, because you are required to say things in between and you can't drink and speak at the same time. And therefore, we demand that you make a new bracha on each of the Arba Kosot. Ve'ein Nira. Tosfot disagrees. Delo Domi Klav. Says the cases are not comparable at all. The reason that Hav Nevarech is influential in this situation is because it's the end of the meal. You're doing something or getting an indication that you want to end the meal. It's only because you can do Kisui Adam and Shechita together that allows you to continue. Because Kisui would be an indication you finished the Shechita. Because if not, if you continue to do Shechita, then Kisui at the end. Kisui is an indication of an end. About tefillah, lo gemar suda. Tefillah is never the end of a meal. And so if it's not the end of the meal, there's no indication by the fact that you can't eat and daven at the same time that that's really the end of the meal. He says, if this factor that's mentioned by the Gemara is only important when you do something that is an indication of an end, that means havlav nevarech, or kisui adam, which are indications that you finished the shechita, an indication you finished the meal, then it's important whether you can do them simultaneously. But in a case where you're doing an action that doesn't automatically indicate a termination of a meal, by that in and of itself is not a hefsek, even though you can't eat and daven at the same time. Therefore, he disagrees and says, even if you daven, you can come back to the meal and continue eating without any problem. What's interesting about this is that the Shulchan Aruch and then the Mishnah Brura by Tisha B'Av actually paskins that this is a din and hefsek. That is, he tells you to eat the meal before Tisha B'Av, before Mincha, then go to Mincha, and then have your Suda HaMafseket. Because there, you're not allowed having the Suda HaMafseket anything besides a single piece of bread and one tavshil, but we eat more beforehand because of the fast that's coming. So that can't be your Suda Tisha B'Av or Suda HaMafseket. You need to eat a Suda HaMafseket beforehand. If you bench from the first meal and then go straight into the Suda HaMafseket, it's a Brocha She'ena Tzricha. Try to avoid that. How do you solve the problem? So the suggestion over there is to go to Mincha in between. Eat your Suda to prepare for Tisha B'Av. Go to Mincha, that'll be a hefsek. Then come back and have Suda HaMafseket. Over there, Mincha or davening is acting as a hefsek between them. The difference might be, is that question of whether Mincha is or isn't a hefsek, or can you make it a hefsek. All the Bali Tosafot say over here is that if you don't intend for it to be a hefsek, it's not a hefsek. But if you do intend for it to be hefsek, maybe it's sufficient grounds to be hefsek that it would not be considered a bracha shein tzricha, even though you're leaving and know you're coming back. Nevertheless, you do have a right to bench in that situation, and it will not be considered a bracha shein tzricha. It's just interesting that you're using something that the Balei Tosafot don't consider to be a hefsek, to be a hefsek, and we're saying you're successful at it. So that plays into this tension as to whether davening is really a hefsek, or whether can you turn it into something that is a hefsek. The Balei Tosafot also asks over here, v'yeshli stapek, says there is some sort of safek with regards to im sach ben shechita l'shechita m'sirich l'chzor l'varech. If you speak between the shechitot, do you need to make a new bracha? So he says, by tefillin, when you sach between the tefillin shayah and tefillin shayrosh, we make you make a new bracha. According to Rashi, you have to make the bracha of al mitzvah tefillin. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, you have to make both brachot again, the difference between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim with regards to this. And therefore, you would have to make laniach tefillin and al mitzvah tefillin al shel rosh. So you see there, when you speak between actions, you need to make a bracha again. Or maybe you don't have to go back and make a new bracha, like when you're in the middle of a suda. If you speak in the middle of a suda, nobody says you have to go make another bracha rishona afterwards, because the speaking was hefsek. Well, you can't speak and make a bracha together. That doesn't mean that you have to make a new bracha rishona. So he says, first of all, let me be clear. If you're speaking about anything to do with the shechita itself, it's definitely not a hefsek. So if you tell me, bring the new animal, bring me the knife, you can speak, those aren't considered to be hefsek because they are minyone, the shechita. Says there, it's pshita that you don't have to go back and mevarech. And he says in the end, you know what? The tefillin aren't a good rai over there because that's one mitzvah. Tefillin shayah and shalosh are a single mitzvah. And that's why over there, when you speak in between them, you create a hefsek. Over here by shechita, each shechita is an independent mitzvah, and therefore maybe speaking in between is not a problem because they're independent. In the end, he says, Mikol Mokom Nira Zisurahu laviat smoldi delach zor v'levarech. Says, by tvoncha yad tvoncha rosh, there's an isur to speak in between, because then you're going to generate a new bracha. But by shkita, maybe you can speak, and then just make another bracha. It's not one mitzvah, it's two separate mitzvah. Why not make a separate bracha for each mitzvah? So Tosfot says, that's not true, because your speaking in between is going to trigger the necessity for a bracha, which is a bracha she'ein atzricha. So he says, better not to talk, because then you're generating what he would otherwise call maybe a bracha she'ein tzricha, because if you didn't talk, you would have been able to use the one bracha. Now that you're talking, you're forcing or triggering a bracha that wouldn't have otherwise been necessary. It says, therefore, it's better not to talk between the shkitot, shalom inyan shkita, because otherwise it will force a new bracha that you didn't need to had you just not spoken in between. And therefore, he says, better not to talk. And if you do talk, it sounds like you would have to make a new bracha. He also says that if you stop doing shkita, and you're going to have to make a new bracha on the shkita, at that point, that already triggers the necessity to kisui adam and all the shkitot you did until that point in time, and you shouldn't start new shkitot before you do the kisui adam on the first shkita. All right, we're going to stop here on the top of Pei Zayin Amud Aleph by the Mishnah.